Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy.
Hi everybody, welcome to the next episode of the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. I'm Jan McIntosh Brown.
And I'm Helen McLean.
And Helen is going to tell you a little bit about the episode.
So, yeah, hi everyone. We're delighted to present another episode for your listening pleasure. We have got Leslie Scobie with us, who has been doing some really interesting work on goals and doing quite a lot of research into this. So we're so pleased to have you join us, Leslie. Could you just kind of give us a wee background to yourself?
Yep. Great to be here. My name's Leslie Scobie, and I'm actually an occupational therapist. That's my clinical background. But I did a PhD, and it was all around the topic of goal setting and stroke rehabilitation. And I currently am a stroke AHP clinical academic, so I work a couple of days a week in NHS Lanarkshire, and my research time is at GCU.
Great. GCU is...
Oh, sorry, Glasgow Caledonian University.
Thank you. May as well give them a little plug.
Jan and I have just been having a bit of a look at the kind of data for who's been listening to the podcast, and the majority of people are in the UK, but we do have a few folk dotted around the world. So, it's just good to get that out there in case people aren't sure what GCU is. So yeah, Glasgow Caledon University. So yeah, that's great, Leslie. So yes, you've completed your PhD now.
Yes. So goodness, when did I complete it? Oh, 6 or 7 years ago. I finished my PhD and have conducted some more studies after the PhD, but my research programme has pretty much kept the topic of person-centred stroke rehabilitation, and really how do we help multidisciplinary staff in practice to optimise their goal setting practice. That's really been the impetus behind my PhD research and everything that has followed on for that.
So could you tell us a little bit about your PhD? I guess my first questions are, what led you into pursuing a PhD, and then maybe a little bit about, well, a lot about your topic? And
So why did I pursue a PhD? Well, I suppose I was, as a clinician in practice, I knew that goal setting was really important. I worked with patients day in, day out, trying to understand or get to the root of what their personal goals were and to help them pursue and reach these goals. And, you know, way back then, the clinical guideline, actually, you know, it was in all of the clinical guidelines, but there wasn't a lot of evidence to say this is how you should do it. There was some broad stuff around, you need a long-term goal, you need a short-term goal. And as a clinician, I thought, well, that's all very well and good, but I'm coming up against one complexity after the next, and it's much harder than just set a long-term goal and a short-term goal. So really, I was interested in what are the theories underpinning goal setting practice? What are the key stages of goal setting practice? And how do you manage some of these clinical dilemmas that we're all too familiar with? For example, what do you do if you think the person wants to set a goal that you feel is might be unachievable? Or how do you support people with communication difficulties through the process? So I embarked on the PhD mainly because I was a... disgruntled isn't the right word, therapist, but you know, I thought, gosh, there has to be more here than this. We need some evidence here to support our practice. So that was a big motivation for me. So that's why I pursued it. And your other question was about the topic itself.
Yeah, or you know, your journey along it, because it's not just, oh, I'm off to do a PhD, is it?
I mean, everybody's journey is a wee bit different and everybody needs an opportunity. Do you know, funnily enough, I had worked in the States, and in the States there was a really big focus on further education. So everybody was really heading to get a master's degree. That was just the norm. And to progress, you really had to have a master's degree and then think about a PhD. So I kind of got this trajectory in my head. Also, I've always been really interested in the why questions, like, well, why this or why not that? And how do you go about this? So that sort of questioning, inquiring mind has always been part and parcel of who I am. And then I just was, I got an opportunity to work in, it was called the Alliance for Self-Care Research at the University of Stirling, and it was a Professor Sally Wyke that headed that up, and she was the first person that really began to mentor me in terms of, you know, this is this, how, what's your research questions and how do you go about answering them? And that was the start of the journey.
And it's, you know, with you talking about the kind of complexities of goal setting, you're absolutely right that we all know as clinicians, as therapists, that's something that we need to do with the people that we're working with, but it's never straightforward, is it? And mm-hmm. And I remember, as you know, when I kind of newly qualified, lots of talk about things like SMART goals and, you know, setting, as you said, short-term goals, long-term goals, but actually having that conversation with people, and I'm a speech and language therapist, having that conversation with people with communication difficulties mm-hmm. is never straightforward as, oh, set a short-term goal, you know. So it's really kind of helpful, I think, to hear someone like yourself can say, you know, yeah, that is a difficult thing to do, because you hear people talking about doing it and they make it sound so simple, but it's not at all, is it?
No, and I think actually I think that's a red flag for me. The minute it's presented as something that's fairly straightforward, fairly simple, just do this, 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 and then you're sorted, I'm like, well, I'm not too sure about that. That's not how it works for me. And yes, like you, the whole SMART goal thing is big, and actually you can tie yourself up in knots trying to write a SMART goal. And the smarter I used to write goals, and I used to pride myself on my SMART. An early SMART goal. I will increase shoulder flexion by 30%, or the person will maintain a midline position while seated in a flat plinth or something like that. I'm just talking off the top of my head. But basically, I was articulating a professional goal that made no sense whatsoever to the person that I was attaching that goal to, and therein lies the first problem. Unless you set a goal that that reflects the person's priorities, that's written in a way that they understand it, that actually comes from within them, then you might argue that you've not actually started the process at all. So I've been there and made all the mistakes, you know, and fell into the traps, and then come out at the other end with lots of questions. And again, that's why I embarked on the PhD, just to get some clarity or evidence to help navigate these difficult things. And actually, Helen, you mentioned about people with communication difficulties. I mean, you two are speech and language therapists. I'm an occupational therapist. I have been terrified going into some conversations with people that have got communication difficulties, thinking, oh my goodness, how on earth am I going to pull this one off? And made a complete, mess of it some of the time. I'm really feel bad to say, just because I didn't have the skills or the confidence or the strategies to support people with communication difficulties. And I actually don't think I'm alone in that. So that's become another mission for me, is that people in the team who are not speech and language therapists don't feel scared or feel empowered or confident to at least start the conversation or support it in a way that's going to be helpful for that person.
Leslie, if I can just share, I've been working as a speech and language therapist for over 20 years, and I still feel scared. So,
you do. Well, do you know, I think that's one of the fallacies of clinical care. Everybody that's not a speech and language therapist think the speech and language therapists have got it sussed. But they know everything about everything, and they can communicate to the nth degree about anything. That's how the rest of the MDT view the speech and language thing.
All right, anybody from the MDT that's listening, forget I ever said that. But no, I think, you know, you still go in and go, I don't have all the answers, and you know, mm-hmm. I'm just going to go in and talk with this person, and let's see if we can communicate with each other. But it's always a daunting prospect.
It does come down to everyone's an individual, and everyone's everyone's communication needs are different, and everyone's personality is different, and how they might be feeling about the mm-hmm. session changes, and mm-hmm. and so I think that's where, from what I know of your work, and we maybe come on to the idea of specifically the GAP Gold mm-hmm. Work that you've been doing, that fits in really nicely with this idea of it being very person-centred. So yeah, I wonder, Leslie, if you could maybe speak a little bit about the specific work around something called GAP that you've been doing.
Yeah, so GAP is short for the goal setting and action planning process, my PhD, I developed the GAP framework, and really it was just a framework to guide clinical practice, and it's called a framework, you know, for good reason. It's not a prescription. It's not to say this is how you do it. It's not got rules like you must set a goal within 3 days and then you must do this or you must do that. Basically, the GAP framework says there's four main stages here. You need to find out where the person's at and where they want to get to, and set a specific goal that reflects what's important to them. So that's the first thing. And then for each goal, you need to create a series of action plans that act as stepping stones that are, say, this is how we're going to work towards your goal. So that's the next stage. And then in stage three, you need to support the person to follow through with the action plan. And that might be they do it on their own, or they do it with support of a family member or a therapist or a rehab assistant or whatever. So they have to follow through with the plan. And then in stage four, you say, right, how did that go? What went well? What didn't go so well? And what are we going to do next based on what we've learned about following through with that plan? And there's different decision-making options at that stage. Are you going to make your next plan to work towards the goal? Or do you need to adjust that plan because although it went okay, or, you know, it was a wee bit of a problem? Or actually, do we need to think, have you tried to work towards this goal for a while now, and these plans, you're finding it difficult to follow through with the plan? Do we need to adjust the goal? Or actually, is this something that's still important to you, or should we refocus on something else? And I think for me, that was a really important bit, because my early training and goal setting was all about set a smart goal, and it was almost like there was this like straight line trajectory to goal attainment. And I never had straight line trajectories to goal attainment. It was always up and down and run about, and often the goal was not attained. So I needed to understand it, or I thought it was important to have a process that supported different trajectories, whether it is you attain the goal, you adjust the goal, or actually you disengage for the goal and you decide you're going to focus on something else. So it's probably one of the unique things about GAP, that it's got that inbuilt flexibility.
And flexibility.
That makes sense.
It absolutely does. I think the flexibility is so important, particularly maybe when thinking around, as you say, disengaging from a goal, because in my experience, and I don't know about you both, you know, maybe sometimes people can be a little bit worried about they've been so set on something, and maybe over time, you know, they have a bit of a realization of maybe that's not going to be achievable. But that's a really difficult thing for someone to recognize. but you're collaborating so much with the person and you're kind of supporting them along the way and you're having very open conversations. I think from what I know of your work, that it feels maybe a bit less scary to say, actually, maybe I've bitten off more than I can chew, you know, because that's scary for anyone to say, isn't it? But it feels like it's more of a partnership, perhaps, with the goal setting, rather than it going back to what we were talking about before, where it's the clinician saying, let's achieve 80% in such and such a test, something like that. Because, yeah, what does that really mean? But I know I'm a little bit familiar with GAP, whereas Jan, you're very new to the whole concept. So I don't know, maybe you're a better gauge for, is this all tangible, like it makes sense?
I think it definitely makes sense in the sense that we need to be constantly working with what people feel is important. We can have a slight difficulty with some of our people where they lack insight, and then it's about trying to create situations where some insight can be developed. When we're talking about stroke and maybe aphasia, I think people do tend to have more insight into communication breakdowns. But then I think we come up with what you mentioned just briefly earlier, Leslie, and that's maybe unrealistic or unachievable goals, you know?
Yeah, I mean, these are all... insight and unachievable goals and are things that come up over and over again in clinical practice and actually in the literature as well. And do you want me to talk about these things?
Definitely.
All right, okay. Okay, so unachievable goals. I suppose I've been a therapist for long enough to have made a few predictions about what's achievable and unachievable and been proven wrong quite dramatically. So I have some humility, I think that in rehab we don't have specific algorithms that we can use that make it very clear when a goal is achievable or unachievable. There are so many variables that play into that that sometimes you just don't know. And somebody can really surprise you, or their recovery trajectory accelerates in a way that you hadn't anticipated. Or actually, sometimes people that you thought were going to do well, things just don't unfold in the way you thought they would. So the first thing is how do we know what's achievable and unachievable? And I just hold that as being something to consider. The next thing I think that it's helpful to think about is goals and hope, and whether we want to acknowledge it or not, goals are usually very much linked to what people's hopes and aspirations are and what their motivation is. So you just need to be really careful if you're going to question if something's achievable, just bear in mind how that might impact on how they're feeling and how hopeful they are as they move forward in their recovery. So these are, I'm not presenting these things as things that are right or wrong or do or don't. I'm just saying, just hold it in your thinking and your clinical decision making, you know, your clinical reasoning, just hold these ideas.
Leslie, if I can just interrupt you, I think we will all be singing your praises. I mean, that is just so encouraging. You know, I think we're all faced with people who, you know, maybe are not able to say anything for their particular stroke, but they want to speak. So, I mean, you know, we all want to get into the game with them and give them a good kick of the ball and just, you know, promote verbal communication as much as we can, you know. So
I think the last thing I was going to say was GAP, I think sometimes goal setting processes like GAS or SMART are very front loaded, and that you have to come up with a goal that you're going to work for it, and you have to commit to it, and then that becomes the benchmark as to how you gauge progress or not. So that means you're putting a lot of pressure on, you need to get that first thing right, the goal right, otherwise you stand to fail. In GAP, that isn't how it works. The goal is really just an impetus for moving forward in the direction that the person wants to go. But because it's a cyclical process, and because you've got a goal that's supported by a series of plans, and then for every plan, you've got this whole appraisal, feedback, decision-making. How did that go? What do we think about this? Are we making progress? Are we not making progress? And then on the basis of that experience, then you think, right, how am I getting on here? Is this a goal? Am I going to keep going towards this? Or do I need to make an adjustment here? So when I set goals with people, I know that the process will support adjustment further down the line if we need to do that. And that's okay, because then the person gets the benefit of experiencing success, or maybe experiencing a setback or failure, which actually can be critical in their recovery, because they're getting that, all right, I don't know that this is going to work. I've been trying, you know, when one of the papers, I use an example of a guy that really wanted to get back to being a taxi driver. And he was doing all sorts of things to support that goal. And then he went on to the driving assessment centre and did the test. And he just said, the information just isn't coming quick enough. He was saying that, you know, he's looking at signs and other traffic, and he just knew he wasn't processing it. And only then was he able to say, I don't know that taxi and going back to the taxis is something that I'm going to be able to do. So he did not meet his goal. He had to adjust or actually disengage for that goal, but he developed this insight, which was so important to him moving forward. And that was critical. So it's not always about goal attainment. Sometimes in trying to pursue the goal and experiencing the setbacks or failure along the way, that can be a really necessary part of the journey. Of course, we as therapists are always there to support the person, because that's hard, or it can be really hard.
Yeah, I mean, I just love what you talked about hope and motivation, and I think the example you've just given us there just shows that, you know, it's the person's goal, and that us just standing with them and supporting them at least experience what it is that they're aiming for, that maybe they come to that realization. You know, I think there's this saying that I've always held true, that a man persuaded against his will is of the same opinion still. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's what that person is wanting. We can talk them out of it as much as we want, but they may never go on that journey unless we support them with it.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I want to say something else it might sound contradictory, but I don't think it is. So for some people, they might say to me, look, you're the expert. What do you think I should be doing? You tell me what to do and tell me what the goal should be, and that's what we'll focus on. And I'm completely fine with that as well. So I don't, using the GAP framework, there's not a rule that says every person must come up with their own goal. It must come straight for them, and it always must be their words, and you're not allowed to interfere with it. Otherwise, it's not a person-centered goal. So that's not what it is. If the person's asking me, what do I think? And I think that that's what they need and it'll be helpful, then I'll say, well, actually, you know, based on this, that, or the next thing, I wonder if this would be a good thing to focus on at first. And maybe a good goal for you might be I'm thinking about another person I've written about in one of the papers, this woman who had a communication difficulty and she wanted to get back to work in an office where she had to be on the phone. And I might have suggested to her, why don't we just practice? Why don't we have your goal that you're confident chatting on the phone, even with a friend? Would that be a good goal? I mean, is that something that you think would be helpful? So So I'm quite happy to take the lead. It doesn't matter who takes the lead, as long as it's in partnership and the person is with you and you're very much authentic and wanting to connect with what's important to them.
Yeah, so those therapy-led goals and opportunities for the person. There was something that you said that I've lost it, so...
Well, I think what I was saying is it's okay if goals are therapist-led. I don't think there's a rule. If that is... sometimes being person-centred means taking the lead. If the person is struggling or they feel they're floundering or they're looking... They're anxious and they're looking for you to take the lead and to demonstrate some expertise because they don't know, then that would lead me to maybe take to lead the process a wee bit more for that person at that particular time.
Yeah. The thought that struck me was you were almost like drawing out the pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that sort of, what do you think, what's next, you know, so they might have this really big goal of wanting to return to work, like you said, and you're using your expertise to sort of map out an achievable pathway for that person.
Yeah, and I think it's the action plans that are the achievable pathway. So whilst at the goal setting stage, which is stage one of GAP, I'm not too worried about being smart or realistic unless the person says, do you think that's realistic? And then I'll tell, you know, we'll have a conversation about that. But when it comes to setting action plans, they do need to be smart, you know, because it's the very next thing that they're going to do to try and get them on the road to achieving their goal. So, for example, the woman that I was talking about on the phone, one of her action plans were, I'm going to phone the swimming pool tomorrow to find out weekend swimming times. So that was that's what she was going to do. And within that action planning stage, you ask, is there anything that's going to get in the way of that? And she said, oh, I could get all mixed up because when I'm on the phone, you know, if I can't just think of the word, I get mixed up and then I bet I'll put the phone down. And then part of the planning process is to say, okay, so that's a potential barrier. What would help you you know, overcome that barrier? And together we came up this idea, a bullet point list. Well, if I write down swimming pool, times, weekend, then that was her anchor words that she was going to focus on. And then she felt confident she could follow through with the plan. So plans do need to be smart because it's how they perform with the plan that will inform the appraisal, feedback and decision making about what to do next. So
with you kind of talking with that example there, Leslie,
mm-hmm.
I suppose that kind of brings in nicely to think about specifically using GAP with someone with communication difficulties. And yes. Obviously I know that you have done quite a lot of collaboration with speech and language therapists to create GAP in a way that is accessible to people with communication difficulties.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you could speak about kind of how did you come about to realise that this was actually quite a big aspect that needed to be addressed, and how did you kind of start to...
I think it's two things. One was my clinical practice and the story I told you before about being terrified or feeling that I didn't have the skill set to support people like that. So that was the first thing. Second thing is, if you look at any goal setting literature or reviews or systematic reviews, or if there's been lots of papers on barriers and facilitators, over and over again the barriers are communication difficulties and actually cognitive difficulties. And I kind of got a bit like, you know, it was almost like, right, I got a bit annoyed because it's like, well, I know the person's got a communication difficulty, but we can't just say that's a barrier and just accept that as the status quo. That is not right. People with communication difficulties have the right to rehabilitation, just like the person who's broke their leg or the person, you know, whatever else. So I felt that people with communication difficulties were, I don't know if... they weren't being supported as well as they could be. So on the back of that, I applied for a PhD studentship in Glasgow Caledonian University. And one of my PhD students, who's called Eleanor Brown, did her whole PhD on developing an accessible goal setting and action planning record for people who have communication difficulties. And actually, that's just, it's just been published in, if, oh goodness, where was it? Disability and Rehabilitation. I forget where that one was published, but there is, on, if you Google Glasgow Caledonian University, Leslie Scobie Gap, that will take you a web page that has got all of the papers for your listeners, you know, to access all of the evidence that underpins some of the things I'm talking about just now. So so to finish that bit of the conversation, Eleanor developed something called Access Gap, and it's using symbols, it's using pictures, it's using accessible formatting principles in order to support people that have got communication difficulties. But what I will say, and I don't need to tell a bunch of speech and language therapists this, is that Access Gap is really, you know, it's a great step in the right direction. But of course, you always need to tailor things. You know, it's, you're never going to come up with one thing that's going to suit everybody. That's the bottom line. So what we found in practice is actually that if we give people an editable version of Access Gap, they can use all the sort of fundamentals but tailor it to particular individuals, so that it's accessible for them.
And that's the important bit, isn't it? It is about being able to tailor it for individuals and to have it kind of out there for therapists to use. And to know that's really good to know that, you know, you can have this, that you can adapt from patient to patient, you know, and it just makes it so much more user friendly. We're much more inclined to then actually access your Access Gap paperwork. Have you had kind of feedback from people kind of on the ground, therapists on the ground who've been using this?
Yeah, so we're currently in the, so I have another PhD student called Katie Elliott, and Katie is an occupational therapist rather than a speech and language therapist. But so we've implemented GAP within three community rehabilitation teams in NHS Lanarkshire, and Katie will do a follow-up questionnaire in focus groups within Lanarkshire. And one of the questions she will ask is, how did Access Gap support you or help you to support people with communication difficulties? So that's certainly something that I'm interested to look at. Has this helped people in practice, and has it been helpful for SLTs, or maybe even more importantly, has it helped physios and occupational therapists and rehab assistants? Has it helped them support people with communication difficulties? So we'll be able to report on that study next year, hopefully.
That's great. Yeah, and hopefully I'm not saying anything that is out of turn in terms of where you come from, Leslie, but I think it's fair to say that within that kind of multidisciplinary team, if you've got a speech and language therapist and you're the physio or the occupational therapist or whoever trying to set goals, then, you know, your speech and language therapist colleagues are going to be delighted to work alongside you to help you with that and to help you maybe upskill, you know, terms of what's the best way to communicate with this person's goals.
I think that's the thing that we love about stroke rehabilitation or brain injury rehabilitation or rehabilitation in general, is multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary team working. I mean, it's hard to beat, to be honest. I just love it, working with SLTs and physios and dietitians or nurses and, you know, the whole team. And I think, so the work that we've tried to do isn't about trying to make, like, how can I explain it? So, you know, it's not about making OTs and physios into speech and language therapists, because that isn't going to work. But it's about having enough, or having the skills and confidence to try some of the basics and knowing when, you know, I need to speak to the speech and language therapist here, or knowing how to work together. But so it's just, so hopefully it'll support that interdisciplinary working. That's the goal. But I should have mentioned, we've developed, the Scottish Government recently funded a project, and we've developed a GAP online training resource. And within that resource, we've got different wee video clips. And one of the video clips is saying just what you've said. If, you know, you co-treatment with speech and language therapy, or go and speak to the speech and language therapist to learn how you can best support that person, or how you might tailor things in a way that suits each individual patient. So, and that's really exciting. That's one of the really enjoyable bits about rehab, I think, that interdisciplinary working.
Yeah, and Leslie, you've talked so much already about the goal. Our goal as professionals is to keep the person at the centre.
Mm.
So whether it's the physiotherapist or the occupational therapist that's using Access Gap, or using whatever communication is to help the person get their message across.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about us, is it? It's about the person. So, you know, I'm all for that as well.
Yeah. I should actually say that Access Gap was never also designed to be a standalone resource. So for some people, when I've used Access Gap with people that have got, you know, fairly complex communication difficulties, other bits of it, like talking mats or bespoke pictures, or, you know, there's clearly loads of different resources to support people with communication difficulties. And Access Gap is just another bit of your kit bag that you can take along and take bits of it, or take all of it, or use it in conjunction with other things. And as I say, talking mats is something that I've used a lot with Access Gap and other strategies to support people with communication difficulties. So it's a bit like having a kit bag, isn't it? When you go into, you don't know exactly what you're going to face, and you want to go in with a few different things in your kit bag that you can get out to help you in any given situation.
That's exactly right. And a pen and paper sometimes. And you might even come across situations where you've got all these great resources, but the person prefers just to use their phone, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you're using Google Maps and contact lists and whatever it is that you can use to support the person, because that's what they're most familiar with. But so that website you were talking about with the Scottish Government, is that an open site, is that available?
Well, so that's the plan. The plan is, the vision is that we're going to complete the evaluation within NHS Lanarkshire, and we would like to make this training gap online training resource freely available to, you know, everyone. What we would like to do, however, before we do that, is to do a larger scale evaluation. So at the minute we've done it within Lanarkshire, but the Scottish Government would like us to roll that out you know, in all different boards in Scotland. But we would like to use that as an opportunity to do a bigger evaluation, because in order to get into clinical guidelines, or to get to the level of evidence you need to say, you know what, there's strong evidence to support that this training is effective in equipping, you know, the multidisciplinary team with the skills they need to for goal setting practice, and if they use this, it's going to have a positive impact on patients. So the Lanarkshire study is an important stepping stone. But we would like to do a bigger study, and on conclusion of that study, to make it freely available. So it's a bit of a, so I'd love to just say, all right, everybody, here's our training resource and it's freely available. But I think we need to take the opportunity to do a bigger scale evaluation, either wider UK, to get more evidence.
And, you know, can I just comment there, Leslie? It's so, I don't know if this is the difference, because you've done your PhD and you've got your kind of research hat on, but I'm sitting here as a clinician going, oh, well, why don't you just make that freely available? But of course, you've got a very good kind of head on your shoulders to think, no, there's got to be processes in place to make sure that this is as good as it can be before it's out there for everyone. So that's where I think knowing people who've done PhDs and work in that kind of, and at all in academia, I think patience is very much a virtue, and that's why the likes of yourself do that work and not me.
I have to be honest, Helen, and say it's a bit of a double-edged sword, because the OT pragmatist within me is like, oh, for goodness sake, you know, I think this is good. We've developed this training well. It's been a multidisciplinary effort. It's evidence-based. It's based on mine and others' studies. Why do we need to do any more evaluations? But I think it's about bigger impact. It's about influencing clinical guidelines so that it impacts beyond our local area, or actually even within Scotland, to make it a national thing. But watch this space.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, I think with more and more, I think there's more and more teams across Scotland, across the UK, and maybe internationally, that are kind of working in this very interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary way. So having something that's a goal setting process that is very collaborative, as GAP is, I think hopefully it becomes something that's more kind of widely known and more widely available. I have to say as well, Leslie, it's just so great to kind of hear someone so enthusiastic about working with colleagues beyond your own profession, and I have to say thank you for doing all of this work on looking at the goal setting process and making these improvements that we can all be kind of benefiting from. So hats off to you.
Well, thanks very much. But that's the beauty of research, and I'm pleased to say that just about all of the papers around GAP are open access. So that means that you can access them and download them free. So they're available for everyone to see and to use. And within the GAP website and Glasgow Caledonian University, within their bigger website, all of the papers are there. So and anybody, feel free to contact me, my contact details are there as well. So I'm always happy to hear from clinicians, because it's good to know what's going on, what are clinicians saying about stuff, and what are they finding hard just now, or what's working well or what's not working so well, or what do they need? I think actually, without going off on a big tangent, a big thing that clinicians often come back to me about is outcome measures, and can we use GAP as an outcome measure? I don't even know if we want to open that chest.
Maybe another chat. It was definitely on my mind to ask you, Leslie, but we might book you in for a further chat.
Well, let's keep that one for another session then.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely, in our kind of episode notes, we'll definitely put a link in to those papers. And maybe put in, if you're happy enough, put in a kind of contact for yourself, maybe your sure. email or something, if you're happy enough to say that. That's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Leslie, we'll not take up any more of your time, unless there's anything else that you're thinking, oh, actually, anything else that's really burning for you to share with us?
If you ever hear that if we do get this large scale evaluation, we'll need to recruit teams that want to do the training, and then we'll need to find out how it went for them. So if you ever get the chance to participate in a study in the future, keep it in mind. That's what I would say to your listeners, or get in touch if you'd be really keen to be a site to be part of a larger evaluation. Just let us know.
Great, absolutely. No, well, thank you again, Leslie, for chatting with us. It's been so interesting to hear kind of the background to GAP and to hear a bit about kind of how it's been moving forward recently.
Okay, well, thank you to you too, and thanks to all your listeners, and hopefully maybe come on again sometime.
Yeah,
That would be great, Leslie. Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.